Do you know what? I wouldn't even, it's really funny. So I sometimes jokingly, once someone asked me to do a talk, and so I referred to myself as a one-tip wonder. And that's fine. You know, these are the scars I have.
Yeah.
I am. So, you know, I feel like these tell the story, right? This tells you who I am. This tells you what I've been through.
Laura Rawlings and Pat Hart's Bloomin' Bleep Cancer Podcast.
Welcome to the Bloomin' Bleep Cancer Podcast. My name's Pat Hart, and with me, as usual, Laura Rawlings. Hello.
Hello, Pat. So nice to see you.
You too. It's episode 3, and hopefully, if you're listening to this, you'll get a chance to get sight of a little screenshot we've taken of our screen while we virtually talk to each other in the comfort of our own homes, I guess.
Yeah, and we're coordinated today, actually. There's a lot of red, pinks, little flash of white going on. We're both wrapped up cozy. It is that kind of a day.
Cerises, isn't it, I think.
Yeah. Oh, I like that word, cerise.
Yeah. So it's episode 3. Thanks to everyone who's been listening and subscribing. And I'm pleased to say, Laura, guess what?
I have no idea what you're going to say. So I am, yeah, okay, what could it be? You've won the lottery since I've seen you last.
No.
No, I don't know. Give me some good news.
You can now just tell your friends, if you're listening to this and thinking, oh, you just got to search for the podcast. No, you can ask your smart speaker. Just ask your smart speaker, yeah, to play the Bloomin' Bleep Cancer Podcast and it will come on, episode 1, 2, or 3, yeah. Simple things excite me.
That excites me as well. Good. I like it. And you did do that in a semi-advertising voice like I hear on the radio sometimes. So very good. Well done, Pat. You've sorted all the technical stuff for that. Appreciate it. It's good.
I really liked the roulette that we played last time. But I'm also conscious that because I talk so much, we haven't heard enough about you. So can you not fix the roulette?
Well, actually, there is a synergy to where we find ourselves today. We're both probably a little gentle with each other and ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think we will ensure that the roulette lands on. So this is where we have a selection of different procedures and treatments that can come along with different kinds of cancer. Not all, because we know that cancers vary, require different treatments. But there are some that Pat and I have had. And so we put them on a list and the roulette, we can spin and it can land on it. Last time we had colonoscopies and endoscopies, procedures we've both shared, and people know lots of things about us now.
And I still
giggle.
If you'd
like to know more, go back. They do laugh. I know. I'm laughing about it as well as I think back to it. But today we're spinning it, and it's landing on, ding, 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 it's landing on chemotherapy, because you've just had some last week. I've had some about 10 days, 12 days ago.
Yeah.
And I've got another load next week. And what kicked this off in the first place, this idea of having the roulette, was people saying, but what's it actually like when you have whatever it is done? So that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about what it's actually like in our experiences, of course, because everyone is different.
Now, if you've just caught this episode, this is episode 3. And just to recap, for me, I feel like I'm going to say, my issue is a lot more simple. Yours isn't. So the intro for me is, you know, diagnosed some time ago, lymphoma, had a long course of chemotherapy for 6 months, and now I'm having what's called maintenance chemo. But for you, it's so much more complicated, Laura. So if you don't mind, people have said to me, Pat, you talk too much.
That's not true. Just tell me, what is lymphoma, though, just as a reminder? Because with most cancers, it points to a very specific part of your body.
Well,
lymphoma isn't like that.
Well, is it lymph nodes? I am so bad at, and you're really good because you read up stuff, so you can correct me when I get all the terminology wrong. But our lymph nodes, obviously, neck, groin, and under the armpits, and those are the things that will often swell or get bigger when we're not particularly well. And my understanding is it's the lymph nodes there that are there to kind of protect us from infection. So when you have lymphoma, they're getting bigger when they shouldn't be getting bigger. And there are a whole host of things that can happen, from kind of hot sweats, illnesses. For me, it was something called follicular lymphoma that was a real issue, which meant I had, it was like a my little ones called it like a strawberry drawing on, growing on the side of my head. So it was kind of growing, getting bigger and bigger. And so my chemo removed that and some of it inside. And my understanding of that is limited. But that's okay. Me. But for you, I was going to write down and say, right, this is what Laura was diagnosed with. But I know I would have got it wrong. Go for it.
So, so mine is breast cancer, and it's stage 3, and it was in my right boob and my lymph nodes, and I had chemotherapy for 6 months to try and reduce it, and then surgery to remove anything that was left. Now, some people, after they've had their 6 months of chemo, well, some people might not have it that way round for starters, but that's how it was for my type of breast cancer. I should also add that mine is a kind called triple negative. Cancer cells have receptors, and those receptors send signals which can make the cancer grow. This is my very basic understanding. Sure. So you might have heard of some people having tamoxifen because their cancer is breast cancer is hormone driven. Mine isn't. Triple negative means it doesn't have those receptors.
Wow.
So there's a little education. Triple negative affects about 15% of breast cancer cases. It's more likely to happen in younger women under 40, people who are pre-menopause, black women. And it's pretty aggressive.
What I was going to ask is that, you know, people that are listening say, look, you know, these two sound, well, Pat sounds quite flippant. I probably always do. But I was watching you because we can see each other on our screens.
Yes.
As you were saying, and you closed your eyes when you described what the cancer was.
Yeah.
What I want to ask is, what does it feel like when you have to say it or you have to talk about it? So for me, I've tried to be flippant, because I find it difficult sometimes and mentally painful to explain what I have. So I kind of lighten it. But
yeah.
But for you, how is it?
I shut my eyes because I can't always remember everything. So sometimes I shut my eyes to think. It sounds ridiculous, but I just get into the zone. To say I have cancer. Do you know, the thing is, Pat, right? I don't know where I am with it. So that is some of the weirdness of saying it out loud, right? So I have had 6 months of chemo.
Yeah.
That started off being every 3 weeks, and then it went to every week for 12 weeks. Then I had a little gap of a few weeks, and I had my boob off and 20 lymph nodes removed, and 18 of them had cancer in, which is not the hit rate you want.
No.
So it was unfortunate I still had cancer at the point of surgery. Some people have a complete response to chemo, which means it isn't there. However, you can still sometimes find things under a microscope in surgery. So I had the surgery. Then I had the radiotherapy at the start of this year to mop up anything that might have been left, to sanitize the area was how they described it. So I had 15 rounds of that. And now I am back on chemotherapy again. Now, please remember, every kind of treatment for cancer, there's broad brushstrokes, and that's what we can talk in terms of. But my treatment path is very particular to my age, the kind of cancer I have, and all the other stuff. Okay, so if you are diagnosed with breast cancer, it doesn't mean you have to do this. I have joined a clinical trial as well, which makes it slightly different. And I'm happy to talk in more detail about that, perhaps on another podcast.
Sure.
So some people with triple negative, after they've done all the stuff that I'd have done, will be on the general. There aren't loads of options, which isn't great, but usually it would be a tablet form of chemo.
Okay.
But I'm on a trial test, and I've been randomly allocated. I could have had the tablet, but I've been randomly allocated a new chemotherapy drug that hasn't yet been tested on people with breast cancer at the same stage as me. And I'm on some immune therapy with that as well. And the two haven't been tested together. So I'm part of a trial, which is about 1,000, just over 1,000 of us around the world are doing this.
Gosh.
So I've got two experiences of chemotherapy. What I was hit with first, and they were a couple of different kinds of drugs, like 12 weeks of one sort, and then another, I can't remember how many weeks of another sort.
And were these through the cannula, or were they tablets or both?
So all the chemotherapy that I have had, including what I'm having now, has been into It's a liquid that's in a little bag that you get hooked up to, like you might get hooked up to a drip.
Yeah.
And initially I started off having what's called a PICC line, which is something that you have to, if you're going to have loads of frequent bloods being taken, frequent treatments, then it's good to have a PICC line. And that's what's most commonly offered on the NHS. And it's something that gets inserted under the skin. There's a very particular procedure you have to go through for it. And it leaves you with some little wires dangling on the outside of your arm. And this tiny, tiny little tube that gets fed inside your body that takes will take the drugs to wherever they need to go. So I've had experience of that. You've got to keep it dry at all times. So it restricts you when you're bathing and showering and you can't go swimming with it. You have to keep it covered. And there's a little plastic thing that you can cover it with. And you have to have it flushed through at regular intervals as well. So I started off with that. And then when we realized I was going to be in this for the long haul and I changed where I was having my treatment done, I was offered a port, and that's a different way of receiving chemo. And that is something that means you could go swimming. It enables a more active life and it doesn't need to be cleaned through as often as a PICC line does.
Okay.
It's sort of less intrusive all around. It does mean that a needle gets stabbed into you. And so it sits just under your skin, and people have them in different places. You go under anaesthetic to have it done, and you talk to the surgeon who's doing it as to the best place. But it could be the inside of your forearm. It could be the front of your chest. Mine is like very weirdly quite near my armpit.
Okay.
And it just sits under there, and you don't notice it most of the time. But it has to be flushed through sort of every 3 to 4 weeks. And then when I go, they use a very particular needle and they stick that in. And that's how I then receive my treatment and
cool.
my chemotherapy drugs. So there's a little bit of a crash course. There are pros and cons of the different kinds, but it makes it a lot better than having a cannula put in every time. Because that's when you have to have a needle stuck in fresh each time.
I absolutely hate that thing. There's a guy called Abdul that they always call because... You know, after 2 or 3 times, you're thinking you haven't got the blooming thing in. And I look away and I just pretend I'm not, you know, it's not hurting. And then they call over at South Mead. They all call Abdul. He's the one who normally gets it straight away for me.
Yeah.
But that whole process is, well, it's painful. And I don't know about you, but the first time I came out in like hives, the first time I had my chemo drug.
So when you were in the chair receiving it?
Yeah. And I remember Sherry was with me and I'm thinking, hang on, I'm feeling hot. And then all of a sudden they're looking at my back and my face and my chest and these big red blotches. And they said it might happen. It was really scary when all of a sudden they bring like the curtain thing all around you and everything. And they go, oh, what's going on? How was it for you, your first episode of it?
Well, just so don't leave us hanging on that cliffhanger. So they can always sort things out, can't they? They're prepared and ready that some people might have an instant reaction.
Absolutely.
And I guess they give you something like Piriton or, you know, some antihistamine.
Yeah, they'll give you stuff and then they'll lower the dose. And then, you know, it's great when they tell you, don't worry, the next time you come in and the time after that, it will get easier and easier because your body will get used to it. And absolutely it did. But the first experience, was really, it was scary for me.
Yeah, it is, yeah. So you go into where you get this is each hospital will have like a unit. I mean, it varies if they've got their own cancer unit or what have you, but you'll go into a unit. When I first went to the Great Western in Swindon, you're all sat in a large room around, you know, in chairs, sort of within a couple of metres apart from each other.
Yeah.
And then you've got... the people administering the drugs who supervise you and keep an eye on you. I felt scared the first time I went in. They obviously do loads of checks, your height, your weight and all that kind of stuff. And I knew that what I was going in with, they said, oh yeah, that's the big red. Oh God. And that's what the drug was known as.
Oh gosh.
And it was the sort of the really tough one. And it was really tough. And actually I've got a thyroid condition, an autoimmune condition, and it sent my thyroid into an absolute tailspin.
Oh.
And so I got an overactive thyroid that night and I was literally, those and the steroids. So I was up awake all night with steroids. then it made my thyroid go over the edge, and I had heart palpitations, and I literally felt like I was in a snow shaker. And every time the snow nearly settled, it got shook again. That was like what my body felt like.
Laura Rawlings and Pat Hart's Bloomin' Bleep Cancer Podcast.
When you receive the drugs, they're actually all right, because you have to be in good, apart from having cancer, you have to be in well enough.
That's an irony, isn't it?
Yes, you have to be well enough to receive the drugs, don't you? And they've measured all your bloods, yeah. What's called your neutrophils. Don't ask me to define what that is, but it's, you know, are you hydrated enough? Are you well enough? Is your blood, red and white blood cell counts all right? This is as much as I know.
No, that's right. And how prone are you to infection and stuff like that? But yeah, for me, it was just that it was, I don't know how to describe it, but there's like a feeling in your stomach that you want to get, like, I want to get sick, but I don't think I'm going to get sick. And there's all different things going on. Mm. And sometimes you don't know if it's, what's the word? Is it
psychosomatic?
Yeah. You don't know if it is that, or you don't know if that is physically how you're feeling. And that's not, this is just at the time. It's surreal. You're in this chair and there's this stuff going through your body, and all these different, the thoughts are going through your head, but these different things are happening to you. And then of course you have to be really careful afterwards, your first doses and about everything from, you know, sexual contact to having a wee, to, because you've got all these chemicals that have gone through your body, and they're gonna, some of them are going to come out as wastage, aren't they?
You've got to double flush the toilet. Every time you go to the loo, you've got to double flush.
How weird is that, though? That was scary when they told me that as well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, having young children, it makes you hyper aware, because you're also parenting. Hmm. Yeah, so when you're in the chair, you're probably in the peak of your physical health. And you have it and you feel all right. I felt okay. I felt all of those nervous things. The first time what did I do? A nurse sat with me. So I chatted to her. That's talking is usually my defense. Yeah. And then I chatted to a bloke next to me. So that sort of got me through. And then the next time around, I chatted to a lady who was really lovely. And actually, although I didn't think I'd given her my name, you have to say your name about 100 times, so she would have heard it. And I was doing a fundraiser, and she found me online and contributed to the fundraiser, and it was just so sweet. So I talked to people, so I was always, you know, sort of all right in the chair. When I then changed and went to a different place, I wasn't allowed people with me, by the way, so I had to go myself.
I don't know whether Sherry was allowed or not, but she came.
Well, it's all the COVID. It was like the sort of COVID-y restrictions. Something stayed on. And so the first few times I couldn't have anyone, and then the next times I could.
Yeah.
But to be honest, I would fall asleep with the Pyriton that they gave me. But do you know what I did? I got in the habit of listening to, there's a brilliant app you can get, and it means you can download library books or get audiobooks from the library for free. And I listened to one of Matt Haig's books, and it just put me in a good mental headspace. It was really reassuring. And so I would just shut my eyes and just listen to that and let the words reassure me, because your mind is full of all the what ifs and all the unknowns. And so I needed to find a way of dealing with that. In some hospitals, you do get things like reflexology, and they come round and you can have a reflexologist, which is wonderful. And I have had that experience of receiving reflexology at the same time. And so what I found, not with this recent drug that I just have only had one dose of, but with the other ones where I had the antihistamine, I'd feel really zonked out. And then I just feel rough at the end, and I would just want to get in the car and get home. Now I'm navigating public transport, and I'm at a trial that's in London. So I have to get the tube and then the train. and I'm hoping I can keep going with that, because it's on the sort of other side of London. But I felt all right. And then the days after, oh my God. It really varies. But when you have chemo that's 3 weeks apart, I think it's fair to say you can assume that week one afterwards, you'll feel the roughest.
Yeah.
Week two, you'll feel a bit more normal. Week three, you'll be like trying to do everything before you have to go back and have it all again.
And then, yeah, Yeah, then you get knocked back. Do you know what? Really weird things. I was talking to someone yesterday. Chicken. The smell of chicken being cooked and the taste of it made me feel sick. I love chicken. Mm-hmm. And I suppose I was shocked the different things it was doing to me. It was almost like, hang on a minute, Pat, you used to like this, you used to like drinking this, eating this, da, da, da.
Yeah.
And everything changed with chemo for me, right down to my ability to be able to just click, sleep. I've never been able to do that. My best friend, Rodzy, he can sleep anywhere. You know, you're talking to him. Or maybe that's just me.
That's just you and him, I think.
But he, honestly, he could sleep anywhere at any time of the day. Me, never. But with chemo, I could. And it's just everything changed, and a constant feeling of, I don't know how you describe it, but just a constant feeling of wanting to be sick, but not being sick, which is the worst. If you actually get sick, there's relief.
You know, I agree. So the background nausea. They say that if you're kind of prone to car sickness or travel sickness or pregnancy sickness, then you're probably more likely to experience, there's a good chance you're going to get the nausea. And that's me too. Aren't we lucky? I remember I couldn't stand the smell of our house. I opened the door and I was like, oh my God. I couldn't. There was a wardrobe that smelled of wood and it was so overpowering. I was just like, that is just awful. I can't sleep here.
But isn't that weird? Isn't it weird?
It's so weird.
A heightened, your senses are heightened in so many ways. And also, sometimes the opposite, either a lack of ability to sleep when you should sleep, or just wanting to sleep when you shouldn't sleep.
Did you get steroids then? So I haven't, I don't know. Yes. I've had like steroid mouthwash this time, but in the past I used to get steroids and they'd sort of keep you going a bit through a few days.
It changes you though, definitely. And I do wonder, I think, well, am I ever going to go back to, well, what is normal? I can eat chicken now.
Yeah.
You know, but it took me a long time.
So what's the gaps between your maintenance chemo now then?
2 months now between maintenance chemo, which, and they told me, look, you need to have this for 2 years. So I do feel incredibly lucky. I really do feel incredibly lucky. And it's easy to moan, isn't it, about us and our symptoms. And then we look around and we see other people doing worse than us.
Yeah.
But that, again, that shouldn't take away what we're going through. But yeah, every 2 months for me. Laura, I know that this is probably something that we'll talk, because we haven't got loads of time, talk about in in another podcast. But I'm really conscious as well, you know, spoken about my condition, but yours as well. Mm-hmm. And you just almost, you didn't lightly say it, but you said, look, yeah, I had this. This is how I was diagnosed. I had a boob removed, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, hang on, you're talking to a guy. How different or difficult is it to talk to somebody? I know we know each other. It's not difficult, no?
Do you know, it's funny. I breastfed my daughter.
Yeah.
And I really embraced my body at that point, because I just thought the human body to deliver, to create a child, then to deliver it, now to like feed it and nurture it.
It is a beautiful, amazing thing,
isn't
it? It's just
an amazing thing, right? So I thought, I'm never, ever beating myself up again. And I also became comfy with boobs and getting them out and not giving a fig what anyone else thinks. It's there for my daughter to raise her.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's give you that as context. Do you know what? I wouldn't even, it's really funny. So I sometimes jokingly, once someone asked me to do a talk, and so I referred to myself as a one-tit wonder. And that's fine. You know, these are the scars I have.
Yeah.
I am. So, you know, I feel like these tell the story, right? This tells you who I am. This tells you what I've been through. Mm. Not I'm great. But nothing to be ashamed of at all, nothing to be shy about. Bodies really do come in all shapes and sizes, and they are so cool. The body's ability to heal is incredible. You know, how my scars are healing is, you know, phenomenal. It amazes me. And I had no idea what I'd look like with one boob. I thought I might miss it. No, I haven't missed it. I've just got used to it. You know, in some ways, there's sort of limited. I don't really have a choice. You know, there wasn't an elective option. This has to be done.
Of course.
So I feel very comfortable being upfront about it. Mm. Yeah. And it's funny, I'm like trying to work out what to wear nowadays, because that the side that I had the boob off is sore after radiotherapy, and now I've started more drugs, seems to sort of aggravate it a little bit.
So there'll be a time period before you kind of say, do you know what? You know, maybe even start buying other stuff or different stuff.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, you've settled. Like, I can't really wear a bra at the moment. I went to an exercise class today. It's fine. No one makes me run anywhere. Even if they did, I don't really care. Do you know, I don't care. I actually really don't care. Anyone who has a judgment about my body does not know the amazing, incredible, crazy journey there's going through. And I'm so proud of it and me for being here. And I actually feel emotional saying that. Yeah, so no, I don't have any hesitation. And if it spreads the word in letting other people know and feel more comfortable in their own skin, whatever it's like, then happy to stand and say that.
Oh, Laura, we're a few miles apart. And I feel very emotional that you say that. And I don't in any way want to be patronizing, but I really feel it's like, yeah, it's an amazing, refreshing outlook, especially when you spoke about when you became pregnant and how amazing that is. And I used to talk to Sherry used to say to me, I'm really fat and I can't share. You are absolutely, and for me, and I can't imagine any man could think anything different, a pregnant woman is, you know, possibly the most beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. You know, absolutely. And the way that you talk about embracing yourself and being proud, but also being confident, it's got to be inspirational to people listening. And as a bloke, I can't imagine what that's like. And you say, oh, what if you had to have one testicle off, or what if you had to have, you know, but I guess that's different too, because it's not actually something that's generally visible. So it's a really different experience.
Yeah. And you know, you find your way, don't you? Like all things, you kind of find your way. And we've been going through winter, so actually that's made having one boob a lot easier, because you just wear loads of scarves or jumpers.
Yeah.
It will be different when it comes to summer. What will I do? Will I put the little softy thing in my, there's a little squidgy pretend boob. Will I put it in a bra? Mm. I don't know.
It sounds like you don't care, but it's like, come on, you know, there's more important.
But I also realise that is very much personal to me. And just because I feel like that, wouldn't expect other people to necessarily feel the same way. You know, it's your boobs are an important part of your sexuality, of your identity, of, you know, who you are. If you're single, it's different again. You know, if you're a different age, it's different again. Mine and how I feel just reflects who I am today, but I certainly don't expect everyone else to feel the same, other than to just be proud of their body and not judgmental about other people and theirs.
I think that's really important. Listen, I think we've almost come to the end.
I know.
However you're listening, or if this feed has come up on your social media and you've got questions or comments, please list them down. Tell us what you think, because we can answer them in the next episode. And just keep sharing it. Just keep sharing it for anyone you feel might benefit.
And what we will do next time is, I know we've talked about what it's like to receive the chemo, but we might talk a little bit about, I know we've mentioned some of the nausea, but some of the other side effects and how that's gone. You know, because if I whip my hat off, we all know I lost my hair and it grew back and it's going to fall out again. So we'll talk about some of those things next time as well, and kind of how we managed it and get through it. Because you do get through it one way or another.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll talk a bit about that too.
Yeah. So listen, everybody, thank you so much for taking some time to listen to us.
Thanks for listening.
That's it. That's the Blooming Bleep Cancer Podcast, episode 3. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
More of the same next time. Laura Rawlings and Pat Hart's Blooming Bleep Cancer Podcast.